I think our last paper this morning will be Pulsating Radio Sources by Dr. Jack Locke from Ottawa. Dr. Locke?
Signal any better than half a degree. remarkable thing was that these pulses were extremely regular. A pulse came, the interval between pulses was about 1/3 second, actually 1.3375, and they gave eight significant figures for this pulse interval. Well, this, no signals of this nature had been previously detected by either radio or optical means. Now, I hope varying sources are nothing unusual in either optical or radio astronomy, but pulses of such short period, only 1/3 second, and impulsive in nature, not sinusoidal, not very gradually, or something that was very, very remarkable and very strange. And of course, this required immediately that other observatories confirm this observation. So the great observatories around the world responded, of course, and as I indicated before, there was a tremendous flurry at the site. Everyone wanted to have a look with their own telescopes to see if what the Cambridge astronomers had reported was true or not. And so I and one of my colleagues, Dr. Clark, took the next train from Ottawa up to our observatory at Mountain Park. Dr. Allen Ginn from the University of Toronto happened to be visiting me that day, and he went along too. And the three of us worked pretty feverishly all night trying to observe these sources. I have this one slide for those of you, which I may have now, please. For those of you who are not familiar with our observatory, the Algonquin Radio Observatory, this is the main instrument that one could use. This is the 150-foot, or 46-meter radio telescope, Marvis instrument. It's designed primarily for very short wavelength work, and so it has an extremely accurate surface. But for this experiment, we decided that we would have to use it at a relatively long wavelength, because the indication from Cambridge was that the pulses could only be observed at long wavelength. And so we happened to have a receiver which we could immediately put on this telescope. And it was a receiver which we used for our very long baseline interferometry versus the one you need to be familiar, and operates at 448 megaspectrals. I have a link, please. We very quickly confirmed the Cambridge observations, and very soon afterwards, observatories from all around the world confirmed the observation. The first published source is known as CP 1919. The CP stands for Cambridge Pulsar, Cambridge Pulsating Source. And 1919 is the right sentence for 19 hours, 19 minutes. Since that time, since the publication of the first one, three more sources have been released, and it may be that the Cambridge astronomers know a lot more, since they have a telescope with which they can do a survey perhaps better than anyone else. The four sources are very similar, except that the periods vary from 1/4 second to 1/3 second, which is the longest one. But they're very similar. The pulses are very short duration. The pulse itself is of the order of hundredths of a second long, typically 20 milliseconds long, and separated by an interval of the pulses are separated by this interval in which absolutely no radiation has been detected. In other words, these are strictly pulsating sources, and ordinary techniques for observing radio sources will not be detected. Well, we very quickly confirmed the observations, and we have, we are now, at the time, trying to do a long baseline experiment on this part in order to pinpoint as accurately as possible the position of the form on the pulsating sources. Because it's will be extremely valuable to identify these sources with optical objects, and you can get an optical spectrum and so on, and learn something about them. The first source, the CP1919, has been tentatively identified with a faint star, but the other three have not, and I think the first identification is somewhat suspect. I'm hoping to learn next week whether they have any inspection data which may settle the problem. Now, I might say just a word about why we are so excited about these sources. They are entirely new. They are no other objects that we have observed. And of course, the theoretical astrophysicists jump into the gap, and there are already half a dozen possible explanations, but no one really satisfies the observation. The first thought was that these might be either white dwarfs, of course, which are observed optically, or they might possibly be neutron stars, and no neutron star has been observed with an optical telescope. So this might have been the first observation of a neutron star. A neutron star is an also very dense star, vibrates very rapidly. It's inconceivable that it vibrates rapidly at 1 per second. And so this would be an interesting technique to observe, to study the neutron stars, which cannot be observed any other way. They might be white dwarfs, they might be binary white dwarfs, they might be supernova, we just don't know. Another interesting aspect is that these sources may give us a yardstick. We know, at least we are fairly confident, that these sources are not very far away in astronomical terms. They are a matter of 1,500, perhaps 200 light years away. And the observation of these pulses, which are characteristic pulses, are not like the continuous emission that you observe from other sources. But these pulses will enable us to determine the material between the source and the telescope, that is, the interstellar material, the interstellar electron density, the interstellar magnetic field. So this is an extremely exciting field. The papers are appearing in Nature magazine in say 2 or 3 a week at the moment, it's at first. So until the next meeting, that stage of the
any questions you'd like to direct to Dr. Locke? Dr. Hurd?
Did I just hear you say why this was seen?
Well, the reason was that they had to be absolutely certain that they were not observing. And, of course, any interference you might expect with the impulsive in nature and also repetition. Actually, they when they looked back in their records, they found that they had been observing the source for many months before it was identified. So I think they wanted to be absolutely certain because there have been instances in radio astronomy in the past where there have been announcements made for the exact signal in the water.
In
know this reminder at the end, I wonder how many people read these things now, maybe back in the history of the economy. This kind of thing used to pop up hundreds of years ago. And Galileo had said it talking several times. One was observing the crescent of Venus. He was all brave to the distance of the moon. He didn't look foolish. Perhaps you remember that he published a book called Cryptogram. That is, he took a statement of what he observed, and it was a statement of what a colorful statement. If I remember, if I remember correctly, it went something like this. The mother of the gods mimics Pentheus, the moon. And then he juggled the words, the letters around, juggled the letters around until it made another sentence. With perhaps two letters left over. And if you put a few letters on at the end and publish this meaningless statement in Latin, and then he let it sit there, you see, until he made quite sure that he observed it. Now, had somebody in the meantime observed it, he could have tried to get a scripture and said, look, we were in the letters.
I think it was a system. you first go through their attempt to be kind of public?
Yes, yes. But the number of graduate students at the University of Cambridge was remarkable to most of us, as to be kept secret.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Locke, for that introduction to Pulsars.